Good afternoon and welcome to our lunchtime conversations from the International Labour Conference here at the Palais des Nations in Geneva. These conversations are brought to you by the ILO's Future of Work podcast series. I am Ibon Bielavitia. Across the world, labour markets are undergoing major transformations driven by digitalisation, the green transition, and demographic changes. These shifts are reshaping not only the types of jobs available, but also the skills workers need throughout their working lives. A new ILO report highlights that lifelong learning is becoming increasingly important for jobs, for better jobs, innovation, and more inclusive societies. However, access to quality learning opportunities remains deeply unequal. Today, we'll discuss how workers and employers are adapting to a changing world of work and what it takes to make lifelong learning a reality for everyone. To help us unpack these issues, we have a panel bringing together research, policy, workers, and employers' perspectives from different parts of the world. We have Hannah Liebman, who is an economist in the research department of the ILO. Thank you, Hannah. We have Pedro Moreno de Fonseca, who's also at the ILO, a lifelong learning specialist. We also have Saad Mohammed, who's the General Secretary of the Pakistan's United Workers Federation. And last but not least, we have Josephine Andrea Mamonji-Arison from the Employers Association of Madagascar. She is the Honorary President of the Employers Association of Madagascar. Hannah, let me start with you. I mean, we all feel that labor markets are changing rapidly. What does the evidence tell us about who has access to learning opportunities today and who is being left behind?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for this question. So as you said, labor markets are changing rapidly and skills are an important factor in this process because skills determine who can benefit from these changes and who risks falling behind. And that means that lifelong learning also becomes increasingly important as a means to make sure that labor market inequalities do not increase even further. Against this background, in our new ILO report on lifelong learning and skills for the future, we mapped the state of lifelong learning globally. And what we find in general terms, so you already referred to that, Ibon, is that access to quality learning is out of reach for many adults, and it is also highly unequal. So one figure that we continue to cite in this regard is that globally, only 16% of workers have access to structured learning over the course of a year. Interestingly, this does not change much between countries of different income levels, and it's also quite similar across different regions. So alongside the report, we published a regional analysis that you can find on our web portal in case you are interested. But just to make the case here now that access to learning is low for workers across different regions. Now, we wanted to go an important step further and understand in much greater detail how people are learning, because this clearly goes beyond formal education alone. And when we did this analysis, we found that there were important gaps in knowledge and evidence. And this was especially true when it comes to learning in the world of work. And it was also especially true outside of high-income countries. And because of this, we designed a new survey tool that we piloted in selected middle-income countries, and that is available to the public. This analysis really revealed that, especially for informal workers, these learn mostly by doing. They don't have additional support or learning opportunities. And the same is true for illiterate workers, for workers with low levels of formal education, and also for workers in small enterprises. And related to this, we also discuss important gender gaps, which we discuss particularly when it comes to access to quality apprenticeships. And so just to conclude, there's still a very long way to go. And I look forward to this panel discussion because I think we'll hear about possible policy solutions and also how they work in practice.
Thank you, Hannah. I think that gives us a clear picture of the scale of the challenges. And now let's move on to policy solutions. Pedro, if I may move on to you. We hear a lot about the need for lifelong learning, but what do we know about what actually works? What are the key ingredients of effective lifelong learning systems?
Thank you so much for this question. I mean, first of all, I'd like to say there's no ideal solution, right? So there's not one single solution that works for every country. All countries have different histories, have different systems, have different cultures. So there's not an ideal recipe for a lifelong learning system. This being said, we did look into what works at both program level and then at policy level. So I'll mention just a bit of the two. And in terms of what works at program level, we ran an analysis of 167 impact evaluation studies for programs in education, training, and other learning modalities. And essentially, a very essential truth is that all learning programs have positive effects. Doesn't matter which type, they all have positive effects over wages, over employability of individuals. But also what we uncovered is that programs that combine classroom and on-the-job learning tend to have much stronger effects. This is the case of, for example, quality apprenticeships, which the ILO is strongly promoting at the moment, or, for example, combining classroom learning with good internships. Another thing which is not necessarily surprising is if these trainings lead to formal qualifications, so to a recognized certificate, they tend to have even stronger effects, which also advises us in terms of too quick adoption of very light certificates that are not necessarily quality assured. Just turning quickly on to what works in policy, we did uncover a few aspects or put evidence behind certain beliefs that we already had. One is that clearly when you have good tripartite governance at national and at sectoral level, you tend to have better investment, you tend to have better management of learning programs, so you need strong support by social dialogue. And I'm glad we have the social partners with us here today as well. You need good institutional capacity to put all these pieces that constitute lifelong learning together in a coherent system. Also sustained financing, which is a big issue to really build up these systems. And despite many efforts that we have seen policy-wise in many countries, what we verify is that there is still a lot of fragmentation in terms of the systems. So there's really a lot of work to be done. Also, very quickly, I would underline the importance of really raising the bar in terms of access. It's not only about creating the solutions, it's enabling people to get into these learning solutions with financial support, with career guidance, with pathways through recognition of past experience and knowledge, and really getting the people who need it into the solution, the right solutions.
Thank you, Pedro. Let's move from research and policy to just what you were saying, social partners and countries. Saad, if I might ask you now, from what you are seeing in Pakistan, how are workers experiencing these changes in skills needs and labor markets? And in the context where so many workers are in the formal, informal employment, are they able to access the training and learning opportunities they need?
Thank you so much for having me here with such esteemed co-panelists. From the context, from the Pakistan context, I see that this is very clear that the workers, they're feeling this change very difficult, especially because, you know, that this time digitalization, automation, climate change, and, you know, then increasing uncertainty in the labor market, this is all hitting the workers already very hard. So they take it very, very difficult. But, you know, most of them who are facing this transition are those who are facing this transition without adequate preparation. Why? Because you know, we in Pakistan, we don't have a proper mechanism of skill development lifelong learning skill is something that is even still beyond something that we can, think about. While we talk about that, there are less opportunities for the, even though no opportunities for the informal sector worker for learning skill, I see even in the formal sector, no worker have any opportunity of improving their skill at the workplace. We do have formal institution, those that are present, but we have to understand that in a developing country like Pakistan, where workers hardly earn their bread and butter, how can they leave their job or, you know, they don't get paid leave for the training? How can they go to the formal institution to get those training and they, you know, bear that wage loss? So they're not in a position to bear that wage loss. So for that, I think that we need to think on that, how from the formal setup, from this formal TVET institution, how we have to first consider to bring these skills training, lifelong learning skills training from formal setups to the workplace, and not just to the workplace, to community level, to informal setups where they can easily in their free time, they can have access to those skills and they can improve their skill. Not just that, we will also have to see that how we can ensure that we come up with something that the workers in the formal sector specifically are given such opportunities by their employers with paid leaves and everything. So that is very important because time is changing and digitalization, what we see today, after 5 years, it will be maybe 500 or 1,000% plus than what it is today. So I see that workers are not in a position, not ready for that maybe. And even though if they're ready, there's no opportunity for them to learn those skills so that they can at that time match their skill with the market and get jobs. If this inequality remains there, I fear that many workers will lose their job because they will not have relevant skills. And the employers, they will be hiring people from outside and will be firing old workers. So we need to, from the workers' perspective and from Pakistan, I think that we need to also make sure that in the TVET, in the technical vocational system that exists in the country, if I talk specifically about Pakistan, those are not tripartite. We shall ensure tripartitism in these TVET institutions so that they sit together and they, you know, decide and they come up with such courses and such trainings that are needed currently and in the coming future. Currently, I assure you that all the training, those that are offered in Pakistan in the technical education institution are those that were needed in 90s or maybe 2002, 3, 4, 5, or maybe till 10. For today, that for example, they are doing routine training of beautician, welding, and all this. This long time that's gone. You have to come up with digital tools, AI, everything is there. So we need to, and then also one thing I think we need to also think from now that starting from the school, we have to start teaching such skills to our children from very early age. And we also have to emphasize importance of technical education to the children. I will comment, this will be my last comment on this. So I won't take much time on this because I know this time is strained, but in Pakistan, technical education or skills training is taken as some time for the one who are not good at studies, for someone who is not brilliant, which is totally a misconception. Parents there, they put pressure on your kids to, you know, to be a doctor, to be an engineer, to be a scientist, or, you know, to be a PhD scholar. But what we have learned, we have seen many machine operators in the factories taking more salary than a general manager maybe, because he knows that how to carefully handle the machine. So it means that skill is what is most important way, and which can earn you more money if you're good at it. So we have also, for Pakistan, I think there's a need that we also revamp our education system in a way that it also promotes skill education, because we cannot have 1,000 engineers and 1,000 doctors because we might have no such jobs in the market. Whereas on the other hand, we need 10 machinists and we need 10 web app developers, and we don't have that. So I think there's a need to rethink and revamp all these things. Thank you.
Thank you, Saab, for that very interesting insight from your country. Now, let me bring in the employer's perspective. Josephine, how are skills needs changing, and what helps enterprises invest more effectively in skills development and lifelong learning?
Thank you for this question. In Madagascar, employers are experiencing significant changes in skills requirements driven by digitalization, technological innovation, green economy, blue economy, globalization, and new enterprise business models. This is there is growing demand, for example, for digital skills, including the use of AI, data management, and information technology. At the same time, employers increasingly value soft skills such as adaptability, problem solving, communication, and also teamwork. Many enterprises are making efforts to respond to these changing needs. Our employers' organization has established a training fund dedicated to financing vocational and professional skills development. We also work closely with international organizations and partners to provide training opportunities to employees. Through these initiatives, many companies have benefited from capacity building programs from the, for example, offered by the EOI, especially in the field of AI, and also the International Training Center in Turin has also played an important role in upgrading the workforce skills. However, many enterprises face challenges in responding to these evolving needs. Skills mismatches remain a major concern, as training and education systems do not always align with the labor market and requirements. And in addition, limited access to quality training programs, especially for SMEs, and businesses operating outside the major urban centers, can hinder workforce development. The situation is, of course, even more challenging for enterprises operating in the informal sector, which account for around 90% of all business in Madagascar. This is really a huge sector. To help enterprises invest more effectively in lifelong learning, strong public-private partnerships are essential. Government can support training through dedicated funding mechanisms, incentives for employers and policies that encourage continuous learning, closer collaboration between employers, training institutions, and international organizations is also needed to ensure that training programs remain relevant to labor market needs and accessible to all workers throughout their careers. At the same time, the current international context, including geopolitical tensions, rising energy costs, and changes in international trade arrangement, has increased pressure on businesses. These challenges often force companies to prioritize immediate operational survival over long-term investment in training. This is why sustained support and collaborative partnership are more important than ever to ensure that lifelong learning remains a reality for enterprises and workers alike.
Thank you, Josephine. We've talked about changing skills needs, unequal access to learning, challenges facing both workers. We've heard just now from Josephine employers. So let's turn now to solutions. How can countries ensure that lifelong learning opportunities are available throughout the working life and that they reach those who need them most? And I'm going to ask you, Saad, first to address this question.
Thank you so much. It's a very important question. From the worker side, like I said before as well, that if we really want that this lifelong learning skill really reach the workers, so we have to first of all make sure that that is reachable to an ordinary workers as well. And to ensure that it is reachable, we have to make sure that all these, what we are talking about or anything that the government design is just in the policies. For example, in country like Pakistan, especially in the informal economy, platform workers, women with care work, domestic workers, young workers, you know, and then migrant workers. Like I said before, they cannot afford to leave their job for the training. So we need to show, first of all, that these trainings shall be free of cost. And I think that employers and the government both shall contribute to it. The employers have the huge CSR budgets. They can spend a CSR budget on their employees' training. If they don't want to spend it from the other side, they can utilize that budget even as well for that side. So they have the money. So this is what I think. And then also we need to be very serious, very serious about awareness as well, that the workers, they don't even understand that how important it is for them to, you know, improve their skill. They only think that what they are learning by doing is just aid by experience. So it's not about, and we have always seen that we say that, okay, you have studied, but experience is what matters the most. Experience do matter, but now skills is something that matters also. So we need to make them understand. And as a worker, I will say, and I will give this message to my employer counterpart and other colleagues there, and the one who are listening, that we as a worker, we are ready to learn every day, but the system must come to us, not expect us, the workers, to come to the system. So this is, thank you.
Hannah, you want to...
I would like to respond to that and maybe also the experience from Madagascar, because I think we now have a very solid evidence base, and our work at the ILO has contributed to that as well, that it will not be enough to simply offer training to workers. Because as you said, many workers, especially the most vulnerable ones, they will simply not be able to afford to take time off from work to improve their skills. And that really means that then income support becomes important. So this can be in the form of social security benefits, also cash transfers. And the two types of support very nicely complement each other, because the income support allows the workers to participate in training, whereas the training allows them to acquire new skills and ideally have better opportunities in the future. And maybe as a more general observation, I think we are not looking for a lifelong learning that only places the entire responsibility on the side of the workers, where the idea is that workers need to stay competitive and adapt to changing labor markets. But instead, it needs to be a realization, and I would assume we agree on that, that lifelong learning also benefits enterprises who stay innovative thanks to it. And it also helps achieve broader societal goals. And this really means then that it needs to be perceived as a shared responsibility. That also entails sustainable financial solutions, and also those need to be understood as a shared responsibility. And maybe we have one example already that Pedro alluded to with quality apprenticeships, where these ideas are already implemented in practice.
Thank you, Hannah. Josephine, you were nodding when Hannah said it's a shared responsibility. You want to take it up from there?
I think that countries can make lifelong learning more accessible and inclusive by adopting shared responsibilities approach involving government, workers, and employers' organization, training institutions, and international partners. First, learning opportunities must be available throughout a person's life, working life, and adapted to a changing labor market needs. This requires flexible training models, including online learning, workplace training, micro-credentials, and short courses that allow workers to learn while remaining employed, because this is a major challenge also, because the employers doesn't always want their employees to go and for training because they need them. That's the reason. Second, I think that targeted support should be provided to those who need it most, including workers in SMEs, women, youth, workers in rural areas, and those employed in the informal sector. As I said, this accounts for 90% of the enterprises in Madagascar. Third, sustainable financing mechanism, as you said, essential training funds, private public partnerships, and support from international organizations can help reduce the financial barriers that prevent enterprises and workers from investing in skills development, especially for the informal sector. Because in Madagascar, when we established our fund, our members didn't want the fund to finance the informal sector. So we had to find funds from partners to finance the informal sector. So this is very important. It has to be a collaboration between the government, the employers, and the international partners.
Thank you. Pedro, you want to add?
Yeah, everything has been said, right? But okay, I'll try to add something. I mean, some more of a generic comment that possibly puts these things together. I think that, you know, we all know there's a massive gap in terms of investment that needs to be done in learning solutions. I think the thing is to think in the medium and long term and not oversimplify the thinking about how this investment must be done. It's not only in formal education and training, it's really on diversifying the solutions for learning and for accessing qualifications. And I think it's what all the panelists have been saying. So it's really not only having the funds, but putting them in the right place and in diverse solutions that cover the full needs of the population, especially in this time of structural transition. And I think all these solutions have already been mentioned, so I'm not going to repeat them. It is important to also pay attention to the fact that the regulatory system, the programs really allow for multiple entry points and make access very easy, smooth for the people. I think the informal sector is indeed a very important aspect, and we haven't been talking so much about upgrading traditional apprenticeships, for example. So what is traditional learning, which still constitutes the mass of learning, the majority of learning in many countries, and the pathway actually to work, to jobs. And a lot can be done on that level, so programs can be stepped up, and it's something that I would like to also underline. In terms of the financing, I couldn't, a lot that this has been mentioned a lot of times, but I will still mention it from the perspective that at the end, countries need to select an architecture for financing of lifelong learning. So there's not an ideal way to do this. There is the appropriate way for the challenges and the opportunities that the country has. You can make use of what already is there in terms of core financing, but then you can have a lot of creative solutions that can have targets linked to the productivity of enterprises that target the small and medium enterprises, but that also meet the people in rural areas, that meet the people in specific sectors which are strategic for economic growth and development of the country. One last point is really invest in a more structured way in career guidance, in recognition of prior learning, so the validation of competences, really outreach, because the reality of lifelong learning is really enabling these flexible pathways to qualifications and to decent work. So training in itself is not sufficient. You need all the rest that gets people on the right track and a track that really empowers them.
Thank you very much. And now to wrap up our program, I'm going to ask each of you to look ahead. Pedro said earlier that there are no ideal recipes, and without the risk of oversimplification, can I ask each of you, so that our audience can take this message home, what is the one thing that would make the biggest difference for lifelong learning system?
If there is a single point I would like to stress today, it's the important, the priority would be to strengthen the cooperation between the employers, government, international institution, education and training institution, and of course workers. Effective lifelong learning systems require all stakeholders to work together to ensure the training programs are affordable, relevant, accessible, and aligned with the labor market needs. Strong partnership can help close skills gaps, expand access to quality learning opportunities, and ensure that workers and enterprises are better prepared for the future of work.
Thank you. Strong cooperation, strong partnership. Who wants to go next?
Exactly the same thing. So it's really, and in the way that it has been formulated before, a shared responsibility, right? So this is, lifelong learning is not the responsibility of the soul of the individual who's learning. So there needs to be a change in perspective. So to build an enabling environment, you do need it to make a a shared responsibility, because you need to set an agreed vision for the development of the system. You need to pool resources from several stakeholders. You need to really agree on the targets to reach and when to reach them. And you need to regularly review the options and agree on how to shift the course that you're following. So we come back to the point on strong governance, tripartism, social dialogue. So for me, that's also the key aspect.
Thank you.
Okay, so I couldn't agree more. In order not to repeat what has been said, let me maybe take a step back and make a broader comment. So we've now heard about these really important building blocks for successful lifelong learning systems. And lifelong learning is extremely important, but it should be one piece of a much broader policy agenda. And so what we will also need is investment in quality jobs, particularly in future growth sectors, so the care economy or green employment. We need social protection, and we need it in general, but especially perhaps for people losing their jobs and people who are transitioning in labor markets. And finally, this is something that we have not touched upon so much during our panel today, but we discuss it in our report on lifelong learning and skills for the future. We also need to ensure that markets and societies adequately value the skills of all workers. And this is particularly the case in sectors creating social value.
Thank you. And finally, Saad.
Thank you. I have always been a backbencher, so I thought coming last would be good. So from the workers' perspective, not trying to be so much technical in that, I would rather say that the barrier is the willingness to learn by the workers. It's time and the opportunity, first thing. And then if we really want lifelong learning to be real, then we have to see that it must be built into working life rather than out of it, because for that you have to spare time. And then this single shift from learning in your spare time, which is normally the phenomena that you have free time other than your time. And so a single shift from the spare time to learning as part of your job, I think can make lifelong learning skills something sustainable and meaningful for the workers. This is what I think. Thank you.
Thank you very much to our four panelists for this very interesting conversation and for your insights. I think today's conversation has made it clear that lifelong learning is no longer an option, but making it accessible to all workers and enterprises will require coordinated policies, investment, and strong social dialogue, and from what we've heard again and again, shared responsibility. Thank you for joining us at the International Labour Conference in Geneva. For those interested in learning more about the issues discussed today, I encourage the audience and those of you who are here to visit the ILO's Lifelong Learning and Skills for the Future portal, which brings together the reports, data visualizations, regional briefs, videos, and other resources on lifelong learning and the changing world of work. Be sure to tune in again as we continue to explore the major transformations shaping the world of work today. You can follow us online at ILO on X, TikTok, Bluetooth, at ILO.org on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky, and International Labour Organization on LinkedIn. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to welcoming you again soon. Goodbye.